Let's go. Okay, it's 4:02, and I'd like to bring the March 12th Environmental Services Advisory Committee to order. And let's move on to item one. We do have a quorum, so I'm gonna do a roll call. Fred Ariza,
Here.
Margo Garcia,
Here.
Hallie Hughes. So she's absent. Doug Jennings,
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter,
Here.
Polly Parks is absent, and we have a new member, Chuck Ray. So,
Welcome.
yeah,
Hello, Chuck.
welcome.
Hello.
Would you like to just tell us a little bit about yourself since you're the new guy?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry. Yeah, I was having a little technical problems, but I'm with you now. Yeah, hi, my name's Chuck Ray. And I actually went in person, but that's okay.
Oh.
I just found out about the meeting yesterday, and so anyway, I'm here.
Hi.
Okay.
Very
And
good.
all right, fine.
Which ward are you from?
Ward 6.
Ward
Ward
six.
6.
Great.
And I understand you're a chemist.
I am a chemist by training. I've retired, but I can still
Right.
become a chemist.
Well, I always think that every person should have to take some chemistry classes. So
Yay.
I'm with you. All right.
I barely got through chemistry.
What?
I barely got through chemistry. I'll just put it out there right now. I'm just not that
Oh, I was tortured in biology, so
good.
good
I had a minor in chemistry for my
for
bachelor's.
you.
Oh, show
So,
off. Thank
we can't be fooled. All
you.
right. I guess I better get started here then. The annual report. First of all, I have to really thank Margot, Trevor, and Fred for helping me scrape this whole thing together. And I'm always amazed when I'm done with the report about how much we did this year. So, and of course, that's all your fault, Carlos, but it's been fun. So I hope you all get a chance to read it. I'm sure that you'll find something that I messed up, but Margo watches me closely. Okay. You all saw the recommendation letter to mayor and council. You got a copy of that. And that's gonna go with all the information that Carlos is taking to the mayor and council meeting on the 17th, right? Okay. And you know, is that's going to be study session and the evening meeting, right?
Yes, that is correct.
All
So
right.
they just posted the information not too long ago, so it's available online. So yes, it would be a study session item early in the morning. I believe it's around 11, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, they're mornings.
And then in the evening, they have this during the special council meeting, they have the notice of intent scheduled for that evening.
So, okay. Yeah, I usually get on and follow what's on the agenda. So, if any of you are interested, you can sit in the audience for the study session. And also be there in the evening to root ESAC on, okay? All right. So the clerk's office wants us to update our ESAC bylaws. We did update it in 2019, and Brittany put it all together. I don't know if you've had time to look through it. We'll probably we'll need a motion to accept it as is, or just keep it as it is, Brittany.
I think we were gonna update a few things to it. Update the Robert Rules of Order.
Oh, okay. I wondered if that was going to be added. So I can just briefly tell you that I had never done Robert's Rules until I came to ESAC. And when I first came, it was hardcore Robert's Rules. And for years, they've had a simplified version of it. So we go by that. And I think, did you get us a set of the changes at all, or did you need me to submit that?
No, I'll we'll make the notation on it. I think the other thing that was questioned was whether or not we can put an ex officio member, but Nadia
Oh.
pointed out that we actually have a notation in the bylaws that allows non-members to attend, or
Not appointed members,
right, so we don't
right.
have to make any changes. That was the other things that were gonna be questioned, but besides just updating the Robert Rules of Order, so
So, how are you going to update them? I'm reading them here on page 4. Motions,
I
and then main motion, substitute motions, friendly amendments, making
Yeah, we
motions.
don't do that.
I know, but I'm just wondering what you're going to write in lieu of that. Are you going to write, you also sent out the whatever it's called, the informal,
Robert's rules.
there's
I'll
open
get
public
language.
meeting and Robert's Rules of Order.
I'll get language from the attorney's office to assist with
Okay.
that.
And then you'll send it
Same.
back to us so we'll vote on it next month.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the only change
Well, I'd
with,
like to see the
okay, more
more language.
discussion.
I don't like to vote on things I don't have the language for.
Okay.
Okay, and the whole point of going to the simplified, relaxed Robert's rules is that we're a small committee. So for small committees and boards, we don't have to do the Robert's rules. And so, I mean, they've even made them more lax. Believe it or not, there's a 12th edition of Robert's Rules, and I know you're going to want to all run out and buy that, but see, so now you can make a motion or speak without the necessity of a formal recognition. If you guys knew me back in the day, I hated being called Madam Chair. Your motions actually with this new version don't have to be seconded. You can speak as often as you can politely obtain the attention of the other members. In fact, motions to limit debate aren't in order, and the motion to reconsider practically knows no limit in a committee. You can discuss things without a motion being on the floor. It says you don't have to take minutes. And we do record all the meetings. The chair can make motions and participate in discussion and vote. And an option operating to the group under these relaxed rules is that you can just take a vote by unanimous consent, which means you can take a vote by assuming a motion, even where none has been formally made. And if it's abundantly clear that a particular decision is pending, state the obvious and make the decision. So, anyhow, if you want, Brittany, I could get some of that. One of my a really good book to get is Robert's Rules for Dummies.
I think Nadia sent something or sent out
Yes, I already did.
Yeah. Okay.
And like I said, a proper language to go in the bylaws we'll get from the attorney's office. I will not attempt to draft that legal language.
Okay. All right.
I love it that we don't have to stand anymore. That would be really
Oh,
good.
that was
Done.
awful. Yeah,
It's
and it wasted so much of the committee meeting by, having to follow Robert's rules. So, anyhow. So, any questions? Good to go.
And just so everybody knows, we were from the clerk's office, we were asked to review it. So we used to do this more on an annual basis, so that's why this has come up. So it's good to just kind of take a peek at it, resend this out to the members, so everybody knows where what the committee what we're tasked to do and what we follow. So that's why this was sent out and put on the agenda.
And
So,
also, we have a new clerk in town.
yeah.
So I think everybody's stepping up.
The other thing was that we have the rule that the quorum is the majority of people appointed, and that probably should be also listed in here.
Yes, it's listed on our ordinance, but it is not updated on our bylaws.
Right, so we should put that in. It's on page 3. It says meetings, 7 members present at a meeting constitute a quorum.
That was our old.
Right, and so we
Yeah.
need to change that language to a quorum is a majority of the people who have been appointed.
Right, and remember, and remember that got changed. It's an
Yeah,
ordinance, and that's
I know.
listed on our, yeah.
But you might as well put it in the bylaws so that there's no confusion
Okay.
over what it's doing. That's on page 3, 6, item C.
Okay.
And so to add that, and the other, so the whole thing 9 on motions is removed. Or something new put into there. There's also about the city managers, page 2 at the top. The term of members shall be in accordance with City Code Section 10A-134, except that members nominated by the city manager and approved by mayor and council should serve 4-year terms from date of appointment. And I think that's still the way it is, isn't it, Chris? Or they changed that as well?
Right. Well, everybody has a 4-year term, and then they can and they can do another 4.
But the point is, if you serve for a council member, you serve during their time of being on the council.
Oh, yeah,
And
yeah.
then if
If
you're
there's a new
appointed by
council.
the mayor, city manager, then it's 4 years from the time when you're appointed. So, anyway, maybe that doesn't need to be changed. It's the way it is.
No.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Okay. Well, let's move to item 3, the director's report. Carlos, are you going to fill us in?
Sure. I prepared like a little quick presentation just to go over it. So I don't know if we can bring it up just so we can get the discussion going. And my understanding is we wanted to get an update, or the committee wanted to get an update on the landfill gas to energy audit, the recent audit.
I'm bringing it up, Carlos. Give me one sec.
Thank you.
What was the date of the audit again?
So it's still not complete. It's
Oh,
still
not.
it's Most of the work has been completed, but the final report is not complete yet. So they provided us a draft copy of it. We have made some comments and some edits. So we're in the process of really getting that finalized. I don't think it's going to change significantly, but it's not. I can't really give you a copy of it final form because we're not there yet.
Okay.
Okay, so again, this is related to Los Reales Sustainability Campus landfill gas to energy audit. So next slide, please. So just to give you a little bit of background to everybody in terms of the city of Tucson under an old agreement operated a landfill gas to energy system from 1998 to 2019. And there was several companies that essentially took over or managed that system, started Zabco Energy Company, then turned into Tucson Energy Partners. So it's really just a private entity that was running essentially that system. So how it operated was they came in, they deployed a landfill gas collection system, they installed a flare, they installed essentially a blower station, and then the blower station and pump station essentially redirected all the landfill gas, and it was pumped to TEP. TEP used that gas, landfill gas, to power up some generators. And in the past, in the recent upgrades that TEP made to the facility, they really didn't have a use for our landfill gas. So we were told we were asked really just to really cease essentially the pumping of that gas to that facility. So therefore, we didn't have an end user for that landfill gas. Mayor and County, so there was a lot of interest from various landfill gas developers to come in and set up operations at Los Reales. Mayor and Council directed us back in, I would say, early or late 2000 or 2020, and said, "Hey, folks, there's a lot of interest. Can we go out and really let's find out what is the most feasible way to use essentially the landfill gas?" So that report was completed back in December of 2021. GHD is the company that prepared the report, and the recommendation for that was really for the city to pursue really the extraction of landfill gas, build essentially a landfill gas cleanup facility, and then essentially pump that gas into the pipeline into the open market and sell that gas as a renewable gas with the intent to recover some tax credits, which are called RINs, the renewable identification number, where essentially would be a tax incentive that would offset the investment for that facility. So we then proceeded on selecting a landfill gas. So we went out to RFPs. I believe we had a total of six developers. So we initially started negotiation with one. We didn't get no positive response from them. Then we've moved on to the second essentially developer, which we're currently working with. And that company is Ameresco. And so when we were negotiating the landfill gas purchase agreement, there was a lot of parameters in there that obligated the city to ensure that we could produce the gas to a specific level of volume and also a specific quality of the gas. So, and if we didn't meet those parameters, then the city would be responsible really to pay the company for the lack of production, gas production, and if we did not meet the parameters of that gas quality. So we felt that we didn't want to put the city in that predicament. So we needed to really get a more of a realistic look at in terms of what was the landfill gas doing out there, what were the parameters. And so then we proceeded on before we executed a landfill gas to purchase agreement for us really to look at executing this landfill gas audit. And that's kind of where we at this point in time. So all the work has been done. Next slide, please, Brittany.
And Carlos, quick question. Is this essentially natural gas that just comes from breakdown of biomass in a landfill? Is that what this?
Yes, essentially, it's really just as waste decomposes, it generates CO2, methane gas, and so it really would be the intent is really to recover this gas. It's not very good quality, so we still need to clean it, remove a lot of the impurities, and then put it into the natural gas pipeline as a traditional natural gas.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
So then, as part of the audit, one of the things we had to do a physical assessment of the system itself, check pressures, check wells, and the other thing that took place during this audit was there was it's what is called a drone flyover or a sniffer, a methane sniffer, and essentially is a drone that essentially goes through the landfill and identifies essentially pockets where there's exceedances of methane gas that are exceeding the cap. And so that would have been a good indication in terms of, is there a lot of landfill gas that is migrating out of the cap that should be recovered or could be recovered on top of what's being pumped out of the system? So that drone basically indicated to us that the system is working okay. It's not, there's not no major flaws. There's a couple of spots in there in red. And then we went out there and corrected those. And most of those are annulus around the well. So we had some gas that was essentially leaving the cap, but no major hot pockets that would give us an indication that there was a lot of landfill gas that was migrated into the atmosphere that could potentially be recovered. So that was part of the analysis, was part of the audit. So not only a physical inventory of the system, checking the pressures on the system, checking the composition of the gas, but also really taking a look at a higher level through the sniffer and see if we had any exceedances or opportunities for us to collect the landfill gas. Next slide, please. So the findings of the landfill gas audit is there's really not enough gas or quality of the gas really to support an economically viable landfill gas to renewable natural gas facility. Okay. And so it's not only the physical assessment that was done again to on site by other consultants that we have brought on board, SES engineers, and this drone survey, that it was very min it indicated that we had very minimal high concentrations of methane emissions. So therefore it was indicative that there was no major sources of methane that was exceeding the cap. So in order for really for a renewable project to be feasible, we needed to really t we need to have at least anywhere between 2400 SCFM at 50% methane concentration. So right now the current flow of the flare is roughly about 800 SCFMs, and at a 30% methane concentration. So we're not really kind of we're not meeting the threshold really to make it a viable system. When we compare ourselves to, because we've been looking at what is Phoenix doing, what is Glendale doing, they have run into the same situation, very limited essentially moisture in the waste stream, very little generation of methane. And so even though they have gone out there and really move forward and execute on a lot of these projects or similar projects, they're almost ending up in the same situation as where we are. The other situation that is, it was a little bit complicated for us as well, is if we were planning to build a facility, clean the gas, and inject that gas into the pipeline, there are two main sources where we can inject the gas. One is essentially obviously Southwest Gas Corporation to be in a position to accept the gas. Chuck, do you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. And then the other one was Kinder Morgan company. Kinder Morgan took the position because the Los Reales landfill is included or is part of the Water Quality Assurance Fund. There is some groundwater contamination that we're dealing with, that they took the position that they didn't want to take any landfill gas from us. And so the way we describe that is that the DNA of our gas was not acceptable really to Kinder Morgan. And by them taking the position, then it was the most viable, I would say, injection point, because it was only a couple miles away. It was very feasible as compared to really to making the interconnect with Southwest Gas. And Southwest Gas, they're saying, yes, we can make the interconnection with the city, but that pipeline is about 6 miles away. So when you start factoring in the cost of building the facility, cleaning the facility, the traditional cost to run the facility, and then build essentially the 6 mile pipeline, then the economics really didn't play out very good. And then on top of that is even if we were to execute that agreement with Southwest Gas, everything was still going to be contingent upon the ACC approval. So I'm not saying it's not impossible, but it's not really, it doesn't seem to be a variable viable option at this point in time. So those are the findings of the audit is saying you don't have enough gas. The quality of the gas is poor. It's you have a very dry mass content. Even if we were to build a facility out there, it's very non-economic feasible because the location of the interconnect and the fact that Kinder Morgan took a position that we don't want to accept your landfill gas. So that's essentially the situation of the feasibility of it and the primary findings of this audit. Next slide, please. Yes, Doug.
Get off mute there. Is there enough methane gas to run a generator, to run a diesel generator? Didn't you guys try that before?
So that's what we're in the process of looking at that. So if you don't, Brittany, if you don't mind just going to the next slide, I believe. So what this is, so what are the next steps? Okay. So we need to finalize this report.
Oh, there
And
it is
then,
right there.
and
Okay.
yes. And so one of the things that we're looking at that is really pairing up how much volume is out there. What is it in the 800 SCFM and the quality of the gas? What can we do out there? And so one of the ideas is really, can we generate power on site? And it's really just intended to, can we power up our facilities, our current facilities, or depending on how much we got, can we start looking at maybe creating a use out there for future facilities? So that way, at the end of the day, we're having some beneficial use for the landfill gas instead of just flaring it. It's really just be able to run some generators, be able to generate on-site power, and create some on-site use, city use, really for us to utilize that energy source. There's still other options in terms of off-site use of the landfill gas. There's three potential major users around the facility. It's a little bit more complicated really to execute an agreement with them because we don't know exactly what are the power requirements and things like that. But for sure, we can probably start pursuing. It's really, what does it look like for the airport authority to use some of our power? Okay, what or gas? What does it look like really for maybe Raytheon to use some of that power? What does it look like for Granite to use some of that power as well? So I think it's really looking at a twofold is one, what is the feasibility really just to generate power? And what is the feasibility really just to export the landfill gas at a very not a high BTU, but a medium BTU. Okay. So those are the things that are being considered, are being incorporated in terms of the audit. So it can be finalized. But one of the things for sure is just not any different than recycling and landfilling. So there is gonna take some investment and there's gonna be some cost differences in terms of how much the city buys power from and how much DEP charges for that power as compared to producing our own power. So there's going to be some investment. I don't think there's going to be savings, but at the end of the day is instead of just flaring that gas, we're running the generators, recovering some energy, but it's not going to be at a savings. Most likely it's going to be at a cost. So the benefit is going to be more an environmental benefit than really from a financial perspective.
I worked with Caterpillar on landfill gas, and so they've got research. I don't know. Have you ever spoke to them?
So, Doug, haven't spoke to them directly on that. So I know Caterpillar is one of the vendors that has generators for landfill gas. There's a few of them. Can't remember the brand. Most of those are German made. So yeah, there's a couple of options that
Yeah,
we can explore. And
because
so.
the landfill gas is very abrasive to the engine, so they did some modifications and studies the time I was working with them anyway. Okay.
So I don't know if there's this next slide, Brittany. So other things that we have to consider as we move forward with dealing with the landfill gas. So as you know, we still are working through a pending notice of violation from the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality, and this is really related to some landfill gas exceedances. So we need to get that closure. We're making a lot of progress. We're hoping really just to get that notice really closed, and that way we can move on. Unfortunately, just and this is related to an inspection, a joint inspection that took place with Pima County Environmental Quality as well as with the EPA back on April 2024. So we just got notification, not just recently, but the EPA sent us a issue to us a finding of violation and issued us a letter on February 19, 2026, very similar in nature to the items that PDEQ issued us a notice of violation or an opportunity to correct. So we're meeting with them, I believe, in about at the end of the month to see what we may be able to do, really just to work through that findings of violation and not really put the city in a position that to be fined. But obviously it's going to require a lot of investment from the city to really take care of that finding of violation. There's going to be, it's inevitably, I think the approach we've taken in the past few years was, it was really, we didn't run the system until 2019. Somebody else was running the system. We were going through the steps of really modifying from a compliance system or compliance program really to or system to now really a system that would generate essentially power. We stopped really making a lot of investments on the system, but now we're now it's time really to say to pay for that price. Now we have to make those investments. Now we have to do a lot of work, not only physical improvements to the system, but really going back and staffing ourselves to make sure that we got the right people monitoring the system. We had heavily rely on a third party provider contractor to come and do a lot of the work for us. We need to walk away from that. We need to bring that work more internally. And really, at the end of the day, really finding an immediate landfill beneficial use now. And so it's really going to be something that before we were thinking a third party developer could come in and help us with this. This is really going, it's especially if it's going to be about on-site generation and really get the system pretty much compliance. We need to make the investments. We need to staff up our team to be able to be reactive and put those things in place. So got a lot of a lot of work to do. One of the other things that essentially that is it's really is being more open now, and this is and this is really what the and it's not really just the EPA or PDEQ, but there's a lot of nonprofit entities that are really are taking a look at our major contributors, not only for methane but CO2, and they have essentially developed this system which is called a carbon mapper. And what it is they deployed a few satellites, and they're monitoring the major methane or CO2 contributors. Unfortunately, they're only tracking us in Pima County, but it and so we just want to make sure that not that that we comply with the permit requirements. And one of our goals is whatever the permit parameters are for us to be below that at a specific percentage. So, if you, Brittany, can you go just go to the next slide?
Hey, Carlos, can I ask a quick question? Just
Yes.
sorry, I'm behind. The notice of violation, my interpretation is it's because we emitted too much methane. Is that
That
correct?
is correct. Yes, that is correct. Yes.
Then
Yes.
is that like if we were flaring it appropriately, or if we had a great flaring design and execution, would we have been not gotten that notice of violation, or is it beyond that?
So I think it's part of it. I don't think it's just the flare itself. It's really just lack of over time we abandoned wells that shouldn't have never been abandoned. We never replaced those wells. So by virtue of not pulling enough gas out of those areas, it really we had exceedances of gas that migrated into the atmosphere. So that's one of them. And the other thing is really we probably could have done a better job on really monitoring our cap to make sure that we didn't have any exceedances on the cap as well. So it's not just one single strategy, it's multiple things that at the end of the day is really leaving up to increased extraction of landfill gas, flaring it, or finding it a beneficial use, that instead of really emitting methane, we're emitting CO2.
Okay, so just fixing the flaring or getting that up to snuff is not going to be enough.
It's not going to be enough, right? Yes. So this is a snapshot of really what the carbon mapper looks like in the Tucson area. I provided you the source if you want the link, or we can provide you the link if you're interested in looking at it. So the metrics that they use are in terms of the how they monitor this is a little bit different. It's not parts per million as compared to what we're issuing the permit. So we just got to make sure that we correlate how they measure the exceedances and what they consider really an exceedance, because no, unfortunately, we still are gonna emit emit so gonna have some emissions. We just gotta do it below the permit threshold. But it's, a plume is still gonna show out there from an air quality perspective. And unfortunately, it's inevitable. Landfills are a source of those emissions, and our goal is really just to make sure that we stay below the permit threshold. So. But that's something that a lot of cities, a lot of nonprofits are really paying a lot of attention to the carbon mapper. The EPA and PDEQ are being sensitive to that, and so we just want to make sure that we do everything we can to not put ourselves too much in the horizon as it relates to exceedances or being cognizant that not only the EPA and PDEQ are monitoring that, we have a lot of third parties looking at our emissions as well.
Carlos, sorry, one more question, Carlos. But you said the permit's based on PPM of methane. But what they're reporting here, if I read it right, is kilograms of methane per hour. So that's what you mean the units aren't the same?
Right. Yes. I think we got to do some conversions, but I think if we do a straight comparison between parts per million versus how they're reporting, yes, we got to make they're not the same units, I think.
Yeah,
Yes.
exactly. Okay, thanks.
Yes, Ms. Margo.
And she's muted.
Think you're still muted, can't hear you.
There was distractions going on here. I was interested in what the difference between why the big difference between December 28th and January 25th, 688 to 157. What is there an explanation for that?
It could be air. It could be the airspeed. Could be the temperature. Could be the atmospheric pressure. We're finding out that even though this information is collected, there's a lot of unreliability on how the information is collected. So even if you look at and the difference between the technology, this is from a satellite versus a drone, how it changes. So it's certainly I couldn't say this is exactly what's happening because it's hard to pinpoint out the differences because there's a lot of variables. It could be cloud coverage. It could be there's a lot of things that could really influence that measurement.
Yeah, I mean, even on December 7th, you have two numbers that, the 586 is almost double the 328. So it's and supposedly at the same time. So I think that's speaking to your point that this particular methodology has some real issues with it.
But folks are reacting to that. And so what I'm saying is we got to be cognizant of what people are how it's being reported, how folks are interpreting that, and really the science in terms of what's a regulatory entity looking at it, how we are going to react to that, and how it's going to be enforced moving forward.
Yeah, because if I read that right, Carlos, the small number just to the right of the bold ones is a plus or minus. So that's your error bar.
Yeah,
So
even that.
it's reported, if that's right, it's 586 plus or minus almost 300 on the one.
Yes.
That's
That's a huge percentage difference.
yeah. It's yeah, the error bar is quite interesting. I don't know if it's just a percentage or what they did, though. It would argue against the percentage idea if the 688 is plus or minus 254, but the smaller number 586 is plus or minus 299. So there's something obviously else going on in terms of the error bar. Things we don't know. Is there a way to get any more information on how this data is being collected? And do I have to read this big thing down here at the bottom? Source cabin map mar mapper. Is that where I would find out?
Yes, you could just Google CoverMapper, and it basically tells you gets you to the website, and then down in there it says can you access, do you want to access that data, and you click on it, and it's basically the world, and then you can start kind of honing in to Tucson in the U.S., and that way you can start really tracking and take a look at this information. But in terms of the science, the reporting, all this stuff, I don't think there's enough detail there, and I think that's what we're finding out. There's all this technology is fairly, it's been there for a while. It's satellites have been there for a long, been in place for a long time. Is really how they're being used, really just to monitor landfill gas and emissions, and really is how accurate that information is in relation to the ground. And I think is the other thing is, and there's a lot of variability in terms of satellite, drone, and versus having stationary facilities. It also there's if you look at the data between all those three sources, they're all going to be all over the place. And so then from a regulatory perspective is which one are you going to use really to essentially to monitor this and to enforce this? And even the technology that is used on emissions, it's got a lot of errors, a lot of parameters. So I'm not saying we're a white angels, but at the same time, we got to take a grain of salt how that information is being collected, how is this being used in comparison to our permit parameters.
So, Carlos, when they use a drone, well, how do they measure the methane? Is it like a spectrometry, or what are they looking at?
I believe so, yes.
Thanks.
So next steps is really trying to get this audit finalized. Then probably the approach that we would take is going to go separately and just onboard one of our like SES engineers or just one of our consultants really to start at really looking at develop what are the alternatives really for us to deploy on-site generation and where would be the place where it makes more sense. And really truly if we do that, how does the city really establish its first, I would say, net zero facility where it really is enabled really to power up our needs? And so it's not really the same principle as net metering. So I think we can still be connected to TEP and maybe figure out a way on how we bring in those generators. So the only time that maybe those generators are not working, we pull essentially energy from the grid. But got to look at the regulations, got to make sure that we are not are putting things in place to make sure we don't get ourselves in a bind. But I think from a technical perspective, I think we can. I'm hoping from a regulatory perspective we can. We just want to make sure that whatever we put in place doesn't really tie our hands operationally, but also at the same time gives an opportunity really to find a beneficial use of that gas. So the thought that we had that this system, at least at this point in time, without making significant improvements, that it's not really going to be an opportunity to generate revenue. We need to make some investments. We need to make some adjustments operationally to make sure that we have better control of the gas, equip ourselves, and really be in a position to install those generators to be able to use that energy. So it's gonna it's a big pivot from what we thought we were going to be, but at the same time, I think it's really more of a more of a proactive approach and not putting ourselves in a situation where it would have been very difficult to get out of and still not really materialize what we were expecting to get, and was revenue and the generation of or the extraction of gas where it's not existent.
Any other questions for Carlos? Okay. That was really interesting.
Thank you.
I learned a lot from that. So, I mean,
Thank you.
do you give field trips?
We're going to probably, yes.
Okay. That'd be interesting for sure. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate all your help and all your flexibility on drafting the letter. I know it was very fluid on our part, so really can't thank you enough for your support and your
Oh,
flexibility
thank
and
you.
understanding. Thank you, all of you.
Oh, thank you. No problem. I just didn't want to make a mistake.
No.
So, all right. Okay, Isaac, are you ready for us to hit item four for the financial monthly report?
I am. Let me see.
Good.
Let me share the correct screen. Okay. I think you can all see my screen right now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. A couple updates from last meeting. I think after I did my presentation, there was a question about Tucson Clean and Beautiful. I'd like to note that in this month's report, it's still at 77. As noted during that meeting, these smaller charges are charges for essentially postage that goes out, bills that go out. But there is one large billing that happens. I think I noted around March last time, but we actually received that invoice with invoice date of February. We've received it and paid it recently. So it wasn't in the financials for February, but it will show up next month when we meet again. And it will be the amount was $173,135 per the agreement that the city has with Tucson Clean and Beautiful. So tying a bow on that piece from last meeting, again, still at 77, that's the postage, but then we're at this 176, which is a little high, again, our level of materiality, I also mentioned last meeting, is 500,000 to change our projections, so that I'll likely leave this number at 176,000, as there isn't a material consequence of projecting that differently. From there, the other big items we were talking about last meeting and have continued to update are the numbers for CIP and capital outlay. And I think the better view of that, I'm sorry, I'm switching between the two reports, but they do affect both reports. I think the more summarized view of those, or the easier way to digest that information, is in this financial overview, environmental services by fund report, Fund 502, which again is Environmental Services Department fund. Generally speaking, there are two other smaller pieces for graffiti abatement that's in Fund 101, and then Fund 503 is our grant fund. All of that aside, we the items we've been talking about largely during our other meetings are these two items: capital outlay and capital projects. Let me actually redo that so that I don't have a line going to the middle. But these two We've talked about at length, and I did a review of the outstanding POs, what we've paid and what invoices we're yet to pay, and the different sections that they belong to. They could belong to brush and bulky, commercial, or residential, those vehicles and/or equipment, or the Los Reales Sustainability Campus as well. But when I did a review of those outstanding invoices that we are likely to pay before June 30th, this is the number that we landed on, which is in alignment with prior years, going somewhere between $10 to $9 million of capital outlay of dollars that we've paid for the replacement of our vehicles and equipment. So this is I guess I'll share it real quick. This is that review of the big items. These are our POs with the different suppliers. I'm getting a little bit into the weeds. Can you see this? Are you still seeing the PDF or are you seeing Excel right now?
PDF.
Oh,
PDF.
okay. Then I wasn't sharing my window. I'm sharing the actual PDF. Let me share my window. I promise this isn't my first time using Zoom and I'll be able to figure this out. Let's see. Window. Oh, come on. So this is the Excel file with the this is really into the weeds, but just to give you a broad overview of what was done, these are basically the items we've ordered and what we've received and invoiced, and using those numbers.
Isaac, unless you're trying to show the spreadsheet, it's not coming up. Are you
Oh.
trying to show the spreadsheet or?
Yep.
Oh,
Sorry.
okay.
Now it's switched.
Oh,
Sorry.
okay.
Well, I was one click away from getting there. Thank you, Carlos. I'm sorry about that. So sorry, let's try that again. These are the list of POs. And last meeting, I had also mentioned a duplicate PO. This one has now been closed, so that matter is also resolved as of last meeting. But then these are the orders that we've had for the either side loaders or front loaders or other items. And these were the items that, or rather the POs that may have had outstanding items like these Peterbilt Spartan transport trucks for brush and bulky. So I took into account where they should all go. And basically with that, summarize that information over here. This is what we have outstanding possibly to be paid before June 30th, $3.5 million approximately. And let me go back here, share, and go back here. And I'll actually switch it. It switched back to the PDF. So that's the number, that's the delta between these two numbers, right? The 7 million plus the 3.5 gets us to 10.5. So that's how the sausage was made on that projection. Those are the outstanding purchase orders to check in with fleet to get a pulse on whether or not we're expecting to receive those by June 30th. So otherwise, I can remove them from this year's forecast and put them into really next year's number. But it does seem like those items have either been received and we just need to pay those invoices, or they will be received soon. With all of that said, that's vehicles and equipment. And then the other thing, the other big item, capital projects. I know we've talked about that too, but the biggest one is what we're paying BFL for the Bifusion site. And it does seem like we will be invoiced fully or near fully for those that PO by the end of this fiscal year, which is why this number is what it is. Basically, it's our actuals minus the outstanding amount on that PO, with a couple asterisks, if you will, which is, speaking of wells, we also have some well projects going on, and we're expecting for some of those expenditures to hit this fiscal year. Largely, they'll likely hit next fiscal year, but at least a portion of that is also being factored into this year's projection.
I
So
asked a stupid question.
there's no such thing, but please go ahead.
Fiscal year, what's that run? Is it July 1st, for is that I insinuated, or
That
when?
is correct. That's exactly correct. July 1st through June 30th.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. So that those are the items we've really been focusing on, as those are the movers of needles, if you will. We do see some savings in the per sorry, if we straight line this out, we do show some vacancy savings for the department. We've touched on that before as well, where it's not necessarily a good thing. It means we have vacancies in the department, and we're asking less people to do the same amount of work.
Right.
But this number I'll likely update before, or for next, I mean, next month's meeting, to take into account those vacancy savings, as it is over that threshold of materiality, which is 500,000. So that's another.
Isaac, does that include like overtime? Because I know
It does. It does. And we.
shorthanded enough to get paid for overtime.
Yes. So those actuals and the budgeted amounts and the projections all include overtime. When we budget including
Okay.
overtime. And these actuals are reflective of the overtime that's been paid in this fiscal year through February 28th.
Okay.
So all of that considered, we're likely to come in under what we budgeted for salaries, wages, and benefits. Unless there are very large ticket items, that is also true of commodities and contractual services as well. And then you'll note that the number, the surplus number at the end of the report has been updated. Again, taking into account
No.
the amounts we're likely to spend largely in capital and capital projects and capital outlay. It's still to our favor, 4.2 to our favor, and it likely will come in higher once these salary, wages, and benefits is updated to closer to 21.5 million.
To be 21.
I don't know if anyone has any questions about those pieces so far. All right. As far as revenues are concerned, some of these will be updated, but by and large, we are falling really near where we expected to end the year when we created the revenue budget for fiscal year 26 last year. So there are no real major updates there. And then as far as so before switching over to the other report, are there any questions on this one? All right, I'll switch over. The largest adjustments to the report have been those outstanding capital projects. Capital outlay. Again, when I looked at the POs, I looked at where they belong and then added those to the forecasted amounts, knowing that we're likely to pay those invoices. Either we have them and they'll post to the ledger here within the next month, or we're expecting to pay for them before June 30th of 2026. But those are the the largest, or rather the most significant updates to the report from last month's report.
Isaac, where does where do the expenses for the compost facility end up hitting?
Compost facility,
They're
I'm
in
not.
under Los Reales engineering and operations, so they're embedded as part of their operating cost.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you, Carlos.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
And thank you. Thank you all for your time.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, Trevor, you weren't at the last meeting, were you?
I was not.
I didn't really get my act together to do something with that. Same with you, Margot. Where'd she go?
She might have stepped away since her camera's off.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not organized for that. I had a few things to do the last few days.
Chris, let me
So,
pull up the agenda and that might refresh our memory.
well, I don't have my notes with me. That's
Well, let me pull up the agenda and I'll share the screen for the agenda and we can just kind of breeze through that.
okay. All my files are all over the table. So in my next life, I'll get organized.
So Chuck, so one of the things that how ESAC has worked in the past and how they kind of divvied up the work is they established several subcommittees, so that way it gives them an opportunity to really just look at things individually. So one is engineering, one of them is waste diversion, and so the other one is a finance committee. So it really, instead of really just us having to report on all those issues, we essentially schedule those separate subcommittee meetings, and then the chair of that committee just provides a report to full ESAC in terms of the topic, rather than just to make this meeting like 2 3 hours long. That's how essentially that's how they've been able to divide and conquer the work. So just FYI, and that's why they want to report on what it was presented in a summary, so that way everybody is on board in terms of what they discussed during that meeting. So thank you.
Perfect. Thanks for the background.
Okay, let's see. March 4th. I did find something.
So I have the agenda on the screen. There wasn't a, or the chairperson report was we just reviewed the annual report that Trevor
Right.
prepared. Pat did not attend this past meeting. We did have a guest staff member attend. His name was Robert Urbina.
Robert,
He
okay.
heads kind of the safety he like the safety investigations when employees are in an accident. And he provided a short PowerPoint talking about the about some of the safety statistics and accidents that occur throughout or for the department and the type of accidents that they see, whether it's a employee injury or a vehicle accident. So there was discussion there. Christina provided the MRF report, which was sent out as backup material.
You want me to help with this or?
Margo, you're welcome to chime in.
Okay, I was just, the MRF report was not very good news. The invoice we had to pay, well, we paid slightly less than December. It was but 142,000. But the biggest problem was the cost of transportation of the glass. Increased 6.2% from $40.98 per ton and up to so the cost of sending glass to the MRF was $155.97 per ton. And so it really brings back up again the whole question about encouraging people to take the glass to the special collections because we get more money for it, Christina said, than we do through here. In fact, it's very expensive, $155, $156 essentially to send glass through the blue bins. So
Yeah,
we
so
need
people
to
are
be
still
working on
doing it.
people that.
Yeah.
And we encourage Christina to start increasing the education about that problem.
Glass is always a problem.
Yeah. The exciting stuff was
Monster.
that they're doing a poster contest for the kids. It's not something that's been done for a couple of years. And you also got a notice of that. The Zero Waste Collection event is coming up at the end of March. Master Recyclers is starting up again. So there's lots of things going on in terms of public outreach.
Oh, and Frank shared a PowerPoint of the composting. So I wonder if that was that shared with everybody on Full ESAC.
I think so.
Okay, because that's really interesting.
I'll share some of the photos he sent.
Oh,
I
okay.
already did, Brittany.
Oh, okay. Well, I
Well,
was just going to share it during the meeting.
go
Okay.
ahead
Go
because
ahead.
what you
Yeah.
can show is what the
Yeah.
difference is. So these, of course, are the Winrows getting ready to go. Go to the next one. Because there was a difference in the screening size. So they brought in a very fancy new machine
A
that
big
had different
screen.
screening sizes. And so one of them was quite fine, and the other one was much more mulch style. Well, there's just one picture there, but the other was a big pile all by itself. No, that's not
The
them.
one that was the one that's not
Okay.
ready to
Well,
go.
anyway, they have a new screening, and that the new compost that's coming through is really very, very attractive, meeting all the standards. And of course, it's all of it is checked. There it is. That's
Yes.
the new good compost that's coming as a result of this screening, which is even finer than before.
And I vouch for it because I use it. And it makes my plants really happy. I think
It
it's
looks good.
the
Yeah.
zoo do. It's good stuff.
So this is 600 cubic yards of the finer mulch. And then we have another pile, which is 400 cubic yards of the coarser mulch. And that one, some of it's mixed back into the compost. A lot of it is put on the slopes of the landfill. And then there's stuff that's over an inch, which is more layered, which is more larger twigs. And that actually is put back into the piles again to be worked on. Then we had the discussion more of the air compliance issues, which sort of got covered today in that that we got this letter of violation from the EPA and how they're drilling new wells. Failure to operate with good practices, some 34 locations, 34 wells needed repairs. Because they're actually emitting landfill gas. They're not just bringing it out into the system. And failure to operate with sufficient negative pressure. And it goes back to 2009. So there's some negotiation with EPA about why some of these details are in the notice of violation. And we have 45 days to have public notice of it. And there's a sign at the entrance to the landfill with the public notice. And people are encouraged, if they want to ask questions or to send in comments about what to do. They've asked, as I said, to have a conference with EPA, and they hadn't heard back yet. And Chris Avery from our city attorney's office will be there helping. There is, of course, a possibility of fines, and that's what we're trying to avoid, taking the approach that rather than paying money to the EPA, we would rather take that same amount of money and apply it to fixing up these problems, because otherwise we'll have to pay the fine and still fix up the problem, so it'll cost the city a lot more.
I think the fines are like $59,000
Yes, they're
Yeah.
a large fines.
A day. Yeah.
Something like that.
That's unbelievable.
So there's an implementation plan that after, will be in 180 days. And the blowers, which create the vacuum or the negative pressure, as it's called, are over 20 years old. So it's not surprising that it's starting to fail. So once again, it's an issue of keeping up the things that we have and that, all that capital improvements we just heard about and the costs for those. That some of it's going to have to go to improving the landfill management and operations. In collections, again, we were mostly talking about new equipment coming in. We're still waiting on 3 units. there are RFPs out for some more side loaders. For those of you who care about trucks, the Peterbilt truck is better at turning than the battle truck, but the battle truck has, I didn't get it in my notes fast enough, has some other things that work better.
Yeah, it's a better
And
turning radius.
the turning radius.
Yes, because it's when they're in small alleys and places like that, it's easier for them to maneuver.
And also they're getting a forestry truck, a second truck, so that they can go around and do the pruning of the alleys and so forth. And it will have a crew box and a shredder. So as they cut the stuff, it'll immediately be put into the shredder and shredded. But probably that's really for the cost for that will be in the next fiscal year. Vacancies, 8 vacancies for operators, have 3 new environmental service workers. And some of them are getting promoted to drivers as they get their license. So if you get in at the lower level, which are the people who rake and shovel and do those things, then they can get into their drivers with the commercial driver's license. However, we still have some pending retirements, and then there'll be 6 vacancies in environmental service workers. So as we wrote into the annual report, this recruitment is simply an ongoing issue, and it's just constant. Bringing in new people, getting them qualified. And there are all kinds of things they're doing to try to make it a more attractive to do this, and including the very good benefits in terms of health and paternity leave and family leave and schooling, all kinds of things.
Is there problems with the competition? Paying more, like Republic and
I don't think so. They've never really mentioned that.
The private haulers do pay more.
They pay
Do they pay
more.
more?
Yeah.
But they don't have as good, I bet, benefits as the city has.
Right. They're required to probably work weekends and overtime, so that they tend to have to work more hours, and they don't get the other benefits.
Right.
Okay.
The brush and bulky on demand, that's been going pretty well. Moving the alley to the curb, there's been a lot of dissatisfaction with doing that. And what's the problem was often people say there's not enough space to put a pile. And so they're still working through on the individual areas where that's an issue.
They're
In the
also
two
having trouble with the cul-de-sacs too, because they're really confined in those tighter areas. They might even consider putting the piles in the middle of the circle. That way they
That's
can.
right. I
Yeah.
know. An interesting
Picture
idea.
that. Yeah. He's
Two
going
of
to bring
the.
us a picture, right? Next meeting.
Yes.
I just had this vision of everything piled in the middle and everybody going around it. And the kids say, "Oh, look at a big bonfire and let's have a party." And sorry. A little off to the edge there. on the other hand, they're getting more appointments. They've already gotten 206 appointments from Area 19 and 134 from Area 25. And Chuck, if you're not aware of this, I don't know about this appointment, but the existing brush and bulky is that you're given a week in which you put your things out and then they come along. And in certain areas, there's been a lot of problems with people putting out stuff too early, with illegal dumping and other kinds of things. So this is where twice a year, each person, each household can call Brush and Bulky and pick up their stuff at any time during the year. So it's a trying to get a handle instead on how that stuff is out there and how long it sits out. And
I
what
wonder
this
how
week,
long the study's going to go on.
I don't
Another
know.
year, or Carlos, do you know?
So I think we got enough information to make a recommendation.
Okay.
I just don't think we're going to be able to make the transition and
Sure.
implementation next fiscal year or next calendar year. So most likely, I think we may just have to postpone that for calendar year 28. Yeah,
Okay.
because we need at least 6 to 8 months, really. One, I think, is to be able to make the transition, be able to do the outreach, do the communication, the calendars, all the stuff. So we're running out of time already. And I think with everything else going on, the rates and stuff like that, I think it's too much information, too many changes all of it at once. So took the executive decision to say, you know what, let's just finalize. We already run it for a year. Let's finish up this year today. Let's assemble all of our findings, put something in play the beginning of next calendar year. And with the proposal, really, if the council feels that there's interest or they want to move forward to make it to implement it in calendar year 28.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we have enough drivers, to do
Well,
that.
I mean, we did get that information from Jose that part of
Right.
it also is that we don't really have enough staffing to handle
Yeah.
going around the whole city every 6 months.
Yeah.
And they need to redraw some of the areas to balance what they're picking up. And the east side is still growing, so there's a need to add more and more areas to it. So there's some management issues that are going to have to be dealt with in the next few months.
Yeah, and more equipment.
So the situation is it's how do we present it and how do we go about it? So if today we still are managing the department with 40 vacant positions, and we still can't get people fast enough, then that's certainly impacting our operations. So if I was to ask the city manager, can we get 20 more positions really to help us with the workload? He's going to say, take a hike because, well, you can't fill your vacancies. Adding more vacancies is not really going to solve, adding more positions, adding more vacancies is not going to solve the problem. So for us, it's really how do we work it backwards? And how do we work it backwards means is if we have a better control of scheduling those pickups on the brush and bulky, I think that's the answer for us because then we would eliminate the peaks and valleys throughout the 52 weeks. There's some areas that we're done on Wednesdays. There's other areas that we have to work 10 days instead of the traditional 5 days in brush and bulky. So if we had better control of the scheduling with the current staffing levels, we may be able to really be ahead of the game. But there's really no interest from the policymakers to say, why do we want to change this if the system is working? Well, phasing outward, it's working, but internally it's not working because there's some times that we get very, very behind because it's very heavy, or we have a lot of illegal dumping in specific areas, or we have to basically hold back because they don't want us to be working in an area because it's Halloween or it's Christmas. So there's a lot of other parameters we have to react, and that's what we need to do really to work with the residents. But at the end of the day, it creates an impact that, and so by transitioning to an appointment base, then we can control how many work orders we do, the scheduling, and it'd be much easier to follow instead of really going from one side of town to the other. It really would be you're gonna get if you call in, you're gonna be serviced on that service day, that particular week that you schedule it in, pretty much in line to when your garbage is gonna be picked up that week as well. So we just kind of follow that schedule throughout the city and not really having to go back and forth from one side of town to the other one on this particular week. And quite frankly, sometimes residents are not ready for it. And so for that, or it also creates an allergic reaction. Oh my God, brush and bulk is coming in. My neighbor's putting stuff out. Whether I want to throw it or not, I put stuff in there. So it there's a lot of moving parts that go along with that.
Yeah. And since it has to be done the whole year, yeah, when you schedule it out, it's a whole year. I would say the biggest issue, and this is sort of going into the discussion, is been around the university area where we know that there are certain times that get very heavy usage of people putting stuff out. So how that gets put into this, or whether we can get enough information out to students or landlords that that in fact is, that they're going to have to call in to get it as opposed to just having it happen at certain times, I think again has to be part of the discussion. So it's going to be challenging.
Well, I think we do that right now because we schedule in those areas, we schedule brush and ball care around those areas.
Yeah.
So it'd really just be a matter of ramping up our efforts, really to be reactive, to be more prepared around those times in those areas. So we may see a spike in terms of those requests around the university and around move in and move out.
But the issue is, well, the students won't know to call. That's my big concern, is that, if they see other people putting it out, they'll do that. But I bet they don't know enough to call and how we communicate to them that they need to do that. Or we just say, we know during these move out times or move in times, we just need to go through whether they call or not.
Right.
Okay. So we have an understanding.
And
All
it's
right.
still a bargain to pay what,
$55.
$55
Yeah.
to pick it up, like if you're in a situation where you've got to take down trees and clean out the garage or something, it's a good
Anyway,
deal.
that was our committee
Yeah.
report.
Thank you. I finally found my notes, so. All right. Okay, so let's move on to future agenda items. I mean, there's some important topics that we want to be kept updated on for sure.
Can we get
As
an update on Bifusion or schedule our tour out there or something? Weren't we going to meet out there one time?
you'll
It's coming up. Yeah,
when
they're not
we
finished
have
yet.
the ribbon cutting for the facility, you'll get invited to that, and
Okay.
that hasn't been given a date yet.
Late spring, that was thrown out.
Yeah, but we'll have to ask Frank how the construction is, because the Bifusion will have to go in there and do their retrofits, and so maybe Carlos has a update on that.
So trying to firm up the substantial completion date is scheduled for the first week in April. So want to make sure that we tie that in and really give Bifusion an opportunity for them to set up their equipment. So it's probably going to take them a few months for them to do that. So we were hoping to be in there spring or already in this time. We're looking pretty much early summer when we're thinking that that facility should be up and running. But I can provide you more of an update next time, more of a formal update, but substantial completion, first week in April. Bifusion moves their equipment with the intent for them to start operating by this summer.
So are they gonna also have to keep up with the orange bags that you have stored at Friedman's, and so that gets added to the regular everyday amount that people put into the orange bins?
Right. So eventually, the goal would be is for us not to take any material to Friedman once Bifusion is up and running. It would all the
Okay.
rollouts will essentially be taken to that facility, and then start really bringing all the bales that we have in storage at Friedman, so they could be processed that at that facility. So yep. So
How
that's the
many
goal. That's
tons? No.
a ton.
Just a
A 10
ton.
of 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll be adding Friedman in as can or as available to do that.
Okay, I
Yes.
wondered about that. And I'm also kind of wondering how the plastic is after sitting in an orange bag
I'll
summertime
find
heat
out.
and stuff.
I'll
Yeah,
find out.
so that'll be, yeah, be good to know.
Carlos, do you know if it's true that Bifusion is building a plant up near Phoenix?
I'm not aware.
Okay.
I'm not aware of that.
I saw something in Circular Arizona that I thought might be indicating that, but I read it very fast, so I could be wrong.
Not to our
It was going to
knowledge.
be a pyrolysis effort for handling it, which is not what we want. Okay.
Right. So did we decide on something for the future agenda or just keep the same updates?
I guess the gas to energy is going to be really important.
That's
And that
gonna
negotiations with EPA, I think we all need to know what's happening in terms of the finances and what role Pima County air quality plays and state and I'd like to be a fly on the wall during those discussions. Carlos probably doesn't even want to be there, but
Have no choice.
yeah, I know you have no choice.
Any choice.
It's going to be tough.
It is going to be tough.
Be tough.
So, okay. Well,
Yeah, so tentatively, we forwarded a note to the EPA that they give us a few dates. And so we checked around calendars. So we're looking at meeting with them on the 26th, March the 26th, at their offices in San Francisco.
oh.
And so we are going to have an internal meeting. So on the 24th to strategize and get our ducks in a row. And then Frank and all the folks that are helping us through this, obviously, we're going to meet in the next couple of weeks. So we'll probably for the next for the April meeting, I think we can provide you a report of how
Okay.
those things came out.
Great.
Okay. Anything else? Okay.
Chuck, anything you want, especially now that you're new to this, or
I'm good.
you're good.
Chris or whoever, feel free to sign me up for any subcommittees or whatever. We can talk offline. But no, thanks everyone.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Thanks for
And
joining us.
let's There's no call to audience, and let's move to
I
item
have an
eight.
audience here, but she's not talking, so.
Oh, okay. So we're over time, 5:28. So the meeting is adjourned, and everybody have a great evening.
Thanks.
It's
Thanks.
gonna
You
get
guys take
hot
care.
again.
Bye now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Darn.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi,
Thank
everyone.
you.
Have a good
Take
night.
care.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.